All right, so tonight, the title class called Joyful Journeys, a Purim-inspired guide to Simcha Fulfillment. So I'll start with a basic question. What are the three top challenges for you to enjoy your own Simcha? For example, a wedding or a bar mitzvah. Obviously, my question is assuming that enjoying a Simcha is not an automatic thing. But I'm just, but I come to this sugya because, first of all, being a rabbi for 30 plus years, and before that, I was a waiter, I was a bartender, and I did Jewish music for 20 years. So I had an in-depth insider experience from every conceivable angle of the Simcha experience. And there's a lot of non-Simcha at a Simcha. It's not so simple to be happy at a Simcha. I'm just going to, I'm just going to unpack that, but I'm going to open it up to my august tribunal over here. What do you guys, what are some of the challenges? Moshe, didn't you just have a wedding within the year? Maybe you might be freshly, obviously you're going to change the names to protect the innocent, but...
I guess family's the big one, right?
Okay, now break that down. That's too broad of a term. What do you mean by that? Break it down. What do you mean by family is a challenge to enjoy your Simcha? Break that down. That has many parts to it.
Let's see.
Well, you can make it, universalize it.
Sure, you got personalities, different...
What do you mean by personalities? How is that a challenge to the Simcha?
Well, obviously everybody would get along, but in reality, you have to sort of sort everybody's... I guess you got to... You want everybody to enjoy the Simcha. People have different parts that they enjoy.
Who's
going to be number one, number two?
So those are two different. Those are two different challenges in one. That's really two in one. Because what I mean is, in other words, if you notice that families, some families are closer than others. And there are some members of the family that don't get together that often, and it's by design. Or it's not by accident. Well, why? And I was like, why are they only getting together for twice a year? Is that because it just doesn't work out? Or they both equally like it that way? Just, you can choose your friends, you don't get to choose your family. So you've got to manage for shalom bias of the situation. So one strategy of shalom bias is, let's don't put prickly, contentious people together more than we have to. That's a good strategy. Okay, so therefore, but the chasna, everybody's invited. You're not going to leave. That will actually cause a worse problem. So you have people who, in general, are not in underneath the same roof for long periods of time. And now you're putting everybody together with all their 10 personalities. Some people get along easy. They're easy, they're low maintenance, and then people are the opposite of that. They're aggressive, they're assertive, they are very machbid, everything bothers them, everything's a problem. And now you have to manage them, because if you don't manage them, they're gonna ruin your Simcha. So you're now in damage control modality. That's number one. Two, you said another good idea there, Moshe. You thought you were only saying one. You're saying two. Other thing is that mi barosh. In other words, let's say a wedding, who's in charge of the wedding?
The bride.
Right. Well, you say, my wife is saying who's got the money. I would imagine that.
I was going to say exactly the opposite. The father of the bride has no say. He goes... Checks.
That's correct. As a father,
if he wanted to have a say, he could.
No,
because he's paying.
Okay, yeah, but he's going to pay for that. That will be very expensive. That'll be double cost. The cost of the chasna, and then that he's asserting going beyond his place. The bottom line is, in other words, there's a very clear sense of who is the koveya of the party and its structure, and what it's going to be about, and how much money should be spent, and spent on what way? There's a million choices. Is it the bride? Definitely not the groom. That's not no say.
The bride's mother.
The bride's mother.
The bride herself.
Right, the bride's mother. the chassan, the chassan's mother. So you got, so then now you,
too many cooks.
Right, then you got, then problem is then there has to be a negotiations akin to the Camp David Accord to work out all the different issues of the caterer, this, because there's like 1,000 choices. Already you're at a struggle. You're starting a struggle. So now you're gonna, enjoy yourself. Now you could argue most of those struggles have already been endured prior to the Simcha, okay? But then, but you're coming to the Simcha, or already that tension thing. I, as a, just going back to my days as a band leader, so, you know, I would deal with either the mothers of the bride or the mother group, whoever was, was in charge, and they were not relaxed, because there's another thing, because now you have the working through the family, working through who's the frictional, who's in charge, then you have the person's navigating this with their community, with their friends and associates. Like, you know, are people going to come to my simcha? Are they going to have a good time? Are they going to think it's chashuv enough? Is this going to be impressive enough? Or do I feel like a loser? You know what I'm saying? There's all these social pressures that guy has to navigate. And then this guy didn't show up. I showed up to his wedding. He didn't show up to my wedding. That son of a gun. Did Joe show up? I didn't get a mazel tov. And then you can have, there's no ends of slice you can have at a chasna. It's just never ending. So if you're constantly feeling slighted and upset and friction, you're having it's not a simcha, it is the word, it is like your Tisha B'Av. It's a terrible experience. And you got to pay a lot of money for it. There's no upside. You're just waiting, as they say. Somebody said to me, in confidence, said to me, he says, he went to the wedding, and then he had the Shabbat Brachas. He says, Rabbi, I feel like I'm getting up from Shabbat Brachas. The same way you say for a Shiva. Now, he was talking about because, in addition to all that, then there's just simply, there's a marathon exhaustion. So they have the chasna, and then typically, since you just spend a lot of money, you got to be getting back to work. So you're going to work, and then you're driving to Muncie, to Teaneck, to, God forbid, Lakewood, to this, for a Shabbat Brachas where you don't know anybody, and you're stuck like in the Shabbat Brachas prison for hours, you can't leave till benching, okay? And then you get invited to every single night. So by the time you haul your sorry tukkah to the finish line, you're exhausted. You're broke. You're exhausted. You're emotionally spent. Mazel tov. Okay? So that takes...
I'm sorry, next time I make a wedding, you don't have to come.
Okay.
My heart is like, you really should just not have to.
Okay. So my wife is making an excellent point. Hold on. I'm obviously exaggerating and I'm putting all the potential problems, and there are others which I didn't mention. If you do it in a unreflective, unstrategic, unplanned way. And I want to use for right now on the doorstep of Purim to learn principles that we can extract from the Megillah to make that experience way better. So I'm starting with, we're starting low, we're going high, okay? But before I go on, does the depiction that I'm telling you, are these problems, have you seen these problems in others? People go through this experience?
I've heard about such things.
You've heard of such things, right. Gary has confirmed that this has been recorded in the annals of human history. Okay. A simcha, we're going to get to it. A simcha can be a simcha, but you cannot be a simcha if you are not, if you don't have a simcha strategy. That's basically my point. And most people do not, and they have, and their experience is hit or miss. Unless they have an intrinsically built-in, they have an intrinsic strategy that makes them successful, but it's not so simple to navigate this and be successful. Okay, so that's my opening thing. All right, so let's take a look at the first five sukkim of the Megillah, right there on the sheet. So Achashverosh is the king of Persia, and he rules 127 provinces. Okay, great. בימים ההם כשב עשה מלך השוויר של הכסים הלכו אשר בשביל אומרי רב בשנה שלא מלכו אשר עשה מסתה לכל שורה עבודה וחייל פרוס ומדייך הפרקים מסורי המדוזו לפונות. Okay, so he's established, when the king of Achshverosh established his royal rule, which is in the capital city of Shushan HaBira, and it was the third year of his reign, he makes a mishnah for all the officers and the servants, Chel Parasim Adai, Parkimim, all these different kind of members of government and of the army and all the officers throughout the entire the empire. And to show his osher, his wealth, the glory of his kingdom, yikar tiferet gedulaso, the glories of his greatness of many days, 180 days, 180-day party. Okay, velosi yamimelu, and after he finished that. And he can have it in a nice garden. He can have a 7-day party for all citizens who are in the capital city of Shushan. So, why is he doing this? Why is he having first of all, why is he marking it with any? Why is he having any mishta whatsoever? And if he's having a mishta, why is it, 180 days? It seems excessive. Three, why is all these servants, what's up with all these servants? Everybody from 127 provinces. And then, the second thing is for the people in Shushan. What's as far as the two parties? Obviously very intentional. What do you guys say? So the reason he's having a party on the surface, it appears that basically his party is the instrument of consolidating power. Okay? In other words, he's basically communicating to all the officers and the governors and the and various authorities throughout the 127 things, look at the osher, look at the kavod, this can all be yours if you are on Team Achashverosh. 180 days doesn't mean that Yoni Sachs has a nice job. It doesn't mean literally they were sitting and eating and drinking for 180 days. You can't take off a half a year and run your empire. But basically, it's akin to what we call nowadays it would be like a convention. What is a convention? So you have sessions, informational sessions. Let's say a corporate, for example, many corporations who had a big year. Or they'll take the whole people down to the Bahamas, okay? They'll rent out the Hilton, whatever, a fancy hotel, and for 3-4 days, so they'll talk about, they'll be talking about their new plans for the coming year, they'll celebrate the success, and then that's during the daytime, and then the nighttime basically is drinking and partying. People getting wasted, people enjoying the osher and the kavod, okay? So, and therefore showing and basically creating more buy-in, part of the corporate family. Oh, you be part of the company. Look what great life you'll have. So basically, the people from Hodu are going to take time to schlep in. So basically having this ongoing time, I don't think they had all members of the people at all time because the guy had to go back to work. I mean, if all the officers are in Mehodu Vakush, if all their governmental people in a non-time there's no communication at all, except through, fast writer and scroll, you can't run that. So there, people came and they came in shifts. They came, that makes more sense. He's not eating and drinking. Now he's there because he has to welcome in. They'll say, oh, welcome in we have the Duke of Hodu showing up today. Oh, Milestone. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's what he's doing. He's basically working a 6-month convention of Achashverosh Empire. And basically, pressing the flesh, making that personal connection, showing them an awesome time, and showing them the kavod, because they're about kavod people. They're kavod people. The main focus by the people of Shushan, they're not so much into the kavod. Yeah, they want to drink Kirtzon Ish V'Ish. It's all about the food and the beverage, in other words, what's on the menu. Very nice. They're in a nice backyard with the hangings, and they're on on fine couches, but still, the bottom line is, what's on the menu? What kind of what's in the schmorg? You know what I'm saying?
Are they? Could you say they're accustomed to a certain level of pageantry? Or you take, like, because they're in, if you live in D.C., you see the president pull up there and the red carpet come out. Or
right.
In a corporate retreat example, they're on the C-level floor getting catered buffet lunches every day. The same party for them is not for the guy coming out of state.
Exactly. But notice the focus is Baharos Osher as Kavo. That, in other words, obviously they're eating and drinking. But he didn't even mention that. Obviously they're the food. But the main point is, they're obviously having the best food. But that's not it. But if you're a regular, if you're a Joe the shoemaker in Shushan, there's an initial wow factor, but you're just interested in basically 7 days of just, you're more of the block party kind of guy with, you know, with a barbecue, different kind of eats. So that's really the main focus. Okay, so, all right, so interestingly enough, the Gemara seizes on this, and there's a machlokus. The most, the Ma'ilu, Rabbi Shmuel Chad, Amar Melech Pikechaya. He was a wise king. Chad, Amar Melech Tipechaya. He was a foolish king. Man, Amar Melech Pikechaya, Shaper Avid, Dekara, Ruchika, Bereshe. Oh, the guy says smart. Oh, smart. It was a smart move that he got people who are distant to come first. Dunei Masei, Kol Emas, Dabai, Mephaisele. Because then people who are local, he can bring them in. Notice he says, Matthias, they are, notice it's about pius. It's about appeasing them, building up that, making sure that they are happy with him. In other words. And the other one says he's a tipesh. Says, no. He boy Leila Karva, he should have brought the people close. He should have flipped it. He should have had the 7 day party for the locals. Because the A Mardu Bay Hana, because if the other people in the distant lands would have rebelled, Havi Kame Bahade, those guys who were close would stood by him. See clear, by the way, you see clearly before getting to the Machlokas that Rav Shmuel maintained is about coalition building and pius. So it's very clear that they're both viewing it as a political move. It's not because he likes to party for so long. The party was l'shem, a certain goal. The question is, according to Rav Shmuel, did he execute a good move or a bad move? Now, I'll tell you truthfully, the problem with this machlok is like, you would say that it would be situational. In other words, obviously, if he had a good rapport with the people of Shushan initially, then why he doesn't have to rush? Let him deal with the people far away. I mean, in other words, this machlokas is hard to really. Both are good arguments, but it really depends on what's the metzias. In other words, if you have a stable, let's say, for example, Shushan is the DC. If the people in DC like Ahasuerus, then he can go. He can expand his campaign for the people beyond. If his local front is not good, then of course it's foolish to start trying to get people from far away. If the capital city is in a state of instability, so I don't have a good machl. I don't have a good. If anybody wants to jump in and have a nice define, because it just seems that it would depend. You know what I mean? I don't know.
What comes first? The fact
he did the provinces and then he did the Shushan people.
I mean, like whether he was a
pikeach or kipesh.
Based on the fact that he's a pikeach, did he say? You know, the following, you know, like it must have been, he made a foolish move. In other words, do you judge that he was a PKF based on the decision, you know, on how he played things out? Or is it...
Or retrospectively.
Or we know he's like a T-page, so he must have been a foolish move.
But there are other things, like why didn't they pick out the fact they killed his wife?
Right.
Why didn't they pick that one? No, so Ravishman's not bothered by that. They're analyzing based upon his act of his kingship move about do I invite the people in further? So, but the truth you can I think it's hard to say that you know. So by the way, if you're saying Rav Shmuel one says he's a chacham, one says he's a pikeach, and they're saying based upon a political strategy, you're really saying then Rav Shmuel is a chacham or a tipesh, because you can argue the other side's also a wise move. You know what I'm saying?
The fact that he was an outsider that really came in and could be looked at as, you know, an interloper in terms of the kingship, Did that factor into...
I mean,
it's a factor in both sides, so that's the question.
Well, it's interesting. If you look the Ralbag, which we'll get to next, the Ralbag has about, I don't know, 100 plus toeliot, which are, you know, what are things to learn from the story for you personally? What are personal benefits you can take from the story? And he is 100% fully in that Achashverosh is the Chacham. Now, by the way, Plame Shot, that is the Plame Shot. In other words, how do you look at him? Is he essentially a Chacham who has some lapses, who has some weaknesses, or he's an idiot that gets lucky? Now, it's hard to maintain that you're the king of this massive empire being by luck alone. That seems to be a little bit, and he has. He has Chazal, that he asked, he has advisors. Chazal compliment the fact that he didn't have, even though that he had this massive harem with every conceivable woman, he didn't have relations during the day. He only had relations at night, nor was the day was a work day. Or, you know, he dealt with, yeah. So that was, so he had some good, you know, so the Ralbag, he's a pshat guy, just, no, he's a chacham. And you can learn from him. Because you can't be a melech of Mehodu Bad Kush, Mehaves from Medinas, if you're a teepesh. You know, the teepesh side is the harder side to explain. Okay, so, and also doesn't mean Mel teepesh, I mean he's a melech, he's a teepesh. In other words, he's not the why, a foolish king. All right, but he has to have, the guy has some game, because you can't become, especially if you take the principle of Chazal, but he wasn't born, he did not inherit the kingship. Chazal said maybe he was a stable boy, right, there's a whole debate about that. But, you know, or because there's different Achashverosh mentioned, is he Daryavish's son, okay, whatever, grandson, all right, there's a, you know, the historical Achashverosh was not, so is he Artaxerxes, okay, who is he from? Okay, I'm not going to get into that historical point. But if you take Chazal, that he was not really supposed to be born into this, then he's certainly a Chacham. Because he pulled off a coup, and he was successful. So the Plame Shot supports, I believe, that he's a Melech Chacham. Okay. But the key point here is that you just from the political point, is that you see that number one is that his strategy of having, in other words, everybody agrees, was having two parties good? That was good. They're arguing whether the sequence, should he go with the province first, then the capital, or capital first, then the province. Okay. Doesn't seem that that's so, is that so dispositive that, it seems to be so close of an argue thing that you can, you know, I haven't done full further free Richard, maybe Ray Shea gave up shot, but I don't know, to me, because the problem you're going to have, let's say you think that Rav, one, we don't know who was one who was, but one says that he's a pikeach, he's smart, then you're really saying, because you like the strategy, because Rav and Shmuel are projecting into what the strategy is. So then you can say that the other guy has bad, that Rav or Shmuel has bad political science advice. And it's not, because they're reading into it. So all right, so I can't take it any further than that. But going on the Ralbag, so the Ralbag says, all right, since he's in the Melech Chacham side, he's like this. Hatuel Zerishon Uvamidos. V'hu Sharoi Lismoch Beto Bimaso Kamor Biyom Tova. Vaya V'ye Betov. That is appropriate for a person, we learn from Achashverosh, it's appropriate for a person to rejoice in the good when it occurs. As it says in Koelis, Biyom Tova Ye Betov. On the day of goodness, you should be joyful. Okay? V'zesi per. Therefore, the Megill teaches us, Shevaharos ha-melech rov osher v'kor v'machusov v'karchi v'er k'dulto. That's he replays the words. He says, when he reached that certain level of political control, success, money, fame, honor, asa zeh ha-mishta ha-gadol, he made this great suda, L'chol Sarav Avdav, L'chol Ha'am, and Nisim Shushim, Merav, Migdol, V'akatan, Shivas Yamim. So he says, he gives him a big Yashikach. And he basically says a basic point. When a person has good fortune in life, like Kohela says, you should rejoice. It's So he worked hard for 3 years to get to the pinnacle of the success, and he should be successful. He should enjoy it. Enjoy your, in other words, he's basically saying, enjoy the tov that you got. And the reverse is, and for you not to enjoy the tov, that's wrong. Let's take a look at the source. A similar notion we see in Rashi. Back to the Mabel. Vayinachem Hashem ki asa es Adam ba'aretz, vayitzasev elibo. And God regretted that he made man on the earth, because it's right prior to the flood. And vayitzasev, metaphorically, it pained his heart. So I'll read you the Rashi. So it says, a Gentile once asked Rabbi Joshua, the son of Korcha, saying, do you not admit that the Holy One, blessed be, knew what is to happen in the future? He replied, yes. The Gentile retorted, but is it not written that he was grieved in his heart? He answered, the guy asked the non-Jew, have you ever had a born son to you? The reply was yes. He asked the Gentile, and what did you do? I rejoiced and made others rejoice. Also, the rabbi asked him, but did you not know that he must die? Because ultimately he's going to pass away. The heathen replied, at the time of joy, let there be joy. At the time of mourning, let there be mourning. The rabbi then said, so too is the way of the Holy One blessed be. Although it was clear to him that in the end, man would sin and be destroyed, he did not refrain from creating them for the sake of the righteous men who were to issue from them. Who came from this whole Dor Mabel? Who emerged from Dor Mabel? What? Well, ultimately Avram, but Noah before him. It did have a fruit. It produced Noach. Noach Yisadik. Matzachain. So basically, he's saying that, you know, but to put the key point is that B'shas Simcha Simcha, B'shas Evel Evel. You don't, even though you know the person's going to die, doesn't mean that you can't have a Simcha. So that's a basic reading of the Pasuk and Koel, Biyom Tova, Biyeh Bato, Biyom Ra, Yeh Rei. Okay, so that's, by the way, now let's take a psychological point. That itself is another challenge that people have. There's certain people that have a hard time just enjoying the Tova they have for the time they have it. Either they feel guilty about it, or it brings up certain anxieties, even the being able to appreciate it, or automatically go negative, yeah, but it's going to not be good. You know, they can work it out. If you've met such people, or they can always go negative, no matter, objectively, this is a toe. But any toe, they're able to find, like in a genius-like way, 7 defects in the toe. Have you met such people?
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line is, let's take the simple situation. Imagine you have a child, and they found the love of their life, and you feel very good about the shidduch, and they're going to live a great life, and they're going to build a bayit in Yisrael. You got the tov. The party's 5 hours. It's just manifesting the simcha. But ultimately, you have a, even if the caterer promised you 12 caterer chafing dishes of food at the shmorg, and you only got 10. Okay. Either you're mochel or you're not going to mochel, whatever. But the bottom line is, the ikker simcha is you got your kids getting married. And I cannot tell you how many people that all these little things that they did a toe, but they always are able, in a genius-like way, to find the, you know, in a certain sense, it's being kafui tova. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave you a tova. And you know, and you can't accept the tova. You can't accept the simcha. Accept the simcha. This is right now, as the goy said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, b'shas simcha simcha b'shas evel evel. Enjoy the simcha. Just allow it.
That's also just generally this concept of not being able to live in the moment.
Correct.
You've got to be able to live in the moment.
Right.
Enjoy the thing. Even if you don't find fault in the thing, you know, something conscious, like somebody mentioned to me, who's walking their child down the, you know, for the wedding,
yeah,
walking that child down, and the guy said to me, he says, I have to tell you, he said, I'm just thinking about work.
Wow.
And I said, you know, got to live in the moment. But right. That's it. I probably common.
Yeah, yes. It's not so, again, it takes a kavana. It's not like, it's like a guy just can't show up in daven mincha. You got to have a kavana, you know, it requires a kavana. So if you, a simcha requires a kavana. What is the goal here? You have this tremendous thing. Your kid is getting married. Now, again, I'm talking about a normal case where the parents are fundamentally happy with the situation, okay? That's awesome. Your kids, you know, and your job is to make them happy. You have a chiyat samasameh tachasana kala. So you're going to be a little bit negative. You're going to share their simcha. That's wrong. So first of all, you should be happy because it's a b'yom tov yeh b'tov. That's not so simple, by the way. I'm just saying that in order, it sounds simple, but people are either they're plagued by negative thoughts. There's what they call in cognitive behavioral therapy, they're struggling with what they call cognitive distortions. It's going to disappear or something, or they're afraid they have excessive anxieties, neurotic anxieties, that something terrible going to happen. So it doesn't allow them their lack of mental health does not allow them to actually enjoy the simcha. It requires a level of mental health to be able to enjoy simcha. If you are a person that's plagued by, plaguing of these intrusive thoughts, negative thinking, you don't enjoy anything, but kal vachomer or simcha. So that's number one. B'shas simcha, simcha. Now the Ibn Ezra modifies that. Okay, so let me just read the pasuk through. So it says, "Biyom tova yebato, biyom ra'e." On the day of prosperity, be joyful, and day of adversity, consider. Now, what should you consider? If there's, Chazal say, "Mafashav v'maisav." Something bad happened, you got to look into your situation and see where you can improve it. Gamet zeh lumazeh, so akel elkeim. Al dibur shelo yimsa adam acharav muma. Yes, God has made the one side by side with the other, to the end that man should not find out anything after him. That's it. That's in other words, Akash Baruch Hu created a world. In the world, a person could have a certain amount of simcha and could have a certain amount of tzaras, and b'shas simcha simcha, b'shas tzar, evil evil. And if you have tzaras and evil, then you learn from that as well. You do a ray, you look into it. Okay. So Ibn Ezra has an interesting b'shas. B'shas simcha simcha. Why should the wise man who has an inheritance and silver be happy with something that does not last? The wise man is, as it were, being told, in the day of prosperity, be happy and joyful, but you must consider that a day of adversity will come. He's actually saying like this, you cannot get overly sameach with something which is a tov, which intrinsically is temporary. In other words, why is it temporary? Because ultimately, let's say there's a simcha. Well, the simcha is going to end. Normal life's going to return. Ultimately, the couple could get divorced, and ultimately, people are going to die. So it's just there is a reality. So therefore, to celebrate this tov as the ultimate tov, that's wrong. So to put into perspective, and I'm saying it is a tov, you should be happy, but that which is truly tov, which is truly eternal, person is sameach with a nice idea. That's something that a person could be happy because that has an eternal existence. But something which is like, you got a big raise. Okay, it's good. But is that the highest good? So a person should be sameach in it, but he's basically, you have to calibrate it to where it really is
temporary in reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't project fantastically the tov more than it is.
And I would say the same thing would apply when he's confronting adversity. Not to magnify the adversity.
Absolutely.
You have to take stock of that. And
correct. That's an excellent point. When a person has tzaras, they tend to fantastically expand it to fill up the totality of his existence. When reality is, let's take stock. Are you alive? Are you healthy? Is your family alive? Is your family healthy? Are you able to support yourself? Are you have a good situation of Torah? I mean, just go on the list. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so this is a ra, but doesn't mean that the totality of your life is a ra. You have many, many brachos. Okay, good. So I'm just, so that's the piece of point. So I want to spend, a decent amount of time then using some of these principles in the practicalities, because it's very nice to speak about these things at a 30,000 feet level. I want to get down to the halakha l'maaseh because I want to share more some more practicalities here. So now, interestingly enough, we mentioned three things that people have jiftuos. They have the family issues. They have the family intrinsically doesn't get along all so well, so putting them together in an emotionally intense situation is fraught. Two is the issue of mi barosh, the decision maker, the conflict among the decision makers. And three, the stress of living up to the expectations of keeping up with the Schwartzes. And feeling that and feelings of inadequacy. And I guess fourth, another challenge is that feeling that you did not get the sufficient kavod due to you in the situation. What is the underlying fantasy that a person brings to every simcha, which is really the so I can ring it, and which you can really learn from the rest of the Megillah by Achashverosh. In other words, the Rabbah gives them a huge yashar koach for that you were right to have a mishteh to celebrate your success. That was good. But one can make the case that he made some mistakes. So what is the essence of all those things I mentioned which really holds back the person from being, which is a source of all the tension? Then we're going to work through some particulars. In other words, those are problems, those are symptoms of a foundational problem. What is the foundational problem? You know what I'm looking for? In other words, those are problems, those are consequences. What is in the core, what is the issue that caused the person to have the great tzaras? Or not, you know, to, what they call, to share the simcha. That the simcha was not fun. The person was like, happy it's over. Why when he's gets together with cousin so-and-so and uncle so-and-so or aunt Sally, whatever, why is that bothering that person so much? Why is the issue that there's a conflict about we should have this kind of band, or we should have this kind of food, or, you know, these different decisions that are happening at the simcha? Why is it bothering that this guy did not say malsaf to him? Or didn't say malsaf in the level of warmth that he felt that he was duly deserved? And I'll give you a hint. If you the part of the Megill that I didn't go on, toward how these mishtas end up, really bring about what the fundamental problem is. So, Gad?
I was just going to say, one thing is, I mean, he could be relating to the simcha as a vehicle for furtherance of his own ego gratification. So...
And therefore what? So therefore why are these things now...
These things are all popping up, and really, it's about the simcha.
Let's work it through. So let's say, why do the annoying members of the family bother him? The thing is like this: people come to the default setting in a person that when they're making a simcha, they're making the simcha like I'm Achashverosh. And therefore, it's my simcha, and therefore, they should be courteous and servile and respectful to my role as I am the Baal Simcha. But the people's emotion, but the problem is that they either, A, they also think they're the Baal Simcha. Okay? You know, you have Melech Achashverosh, and you have Vashti Amalka, or Amalka Vashti. So that's when the simcha becomes not about the simcha, becomes a vehicle of maintaining, or better yet, moving my rank up socially. I'm the Melech. So therefore, everything is, therefore, and everything that shows is that you're not Achashverosh. The person doesn't show up. Well, so what is he saying? Not simply, maybe he was sick, maybe he couldn't come. Well, he's not respecting my gedula. One. So already he's bothered. Because, you know, because he's trying to maintain the sense of Achashverosh-ness at the Simcha. And that's being undermined. Next, the relative who's being annoying, don't they recognize that I'm the Baal Simcha and they should be courteous and they should keep their issues to themselves, which they can't? Or the decision maker, in other words, what is this? Because in other words, what do you mean? You're not the Achashverosh? Oh, so you know, so you have multiple, or you have two mothers of the bride or group, so you have competing Vashtis. Who's running the show? Well, that's not going to end well because it's about the control. The Simcha becomes the playground, or you want to call it the battlefield. That's what people use. They call it, you know, Bridezilla. Now, there's two shots of Bridezilla. Why is she called Bridezilla? Either because her need to be Vashti Hamalka is so excessive, she's making everybody crazy, right? Or B, she's labeled Bridezilla because she's not listening to Achashverosh and her mom. You know what I'm saying? And therefore they label, oh, she's Bridezilla because she is not related to our will. So it becomes a control battle of who can be the Achashverosh. But that's the problem. Don't be the Achashverosh. That's the problem. The degree that you can pull yourself out of the Achashverosh role, proportionally, you will be happier. The more you need to assert your Achashverosh-ness, you will be miserable. Because, A, people are not going to recognize your Achashverosh-ness, and there are other people with their other Achashverosh in the room. The problem is, you're not, you know, Achashverosh, he could be Achashverosh, because he is, in fact, the Melech Mehodu Vatkush. Okay? And even that, people trying to assassinate him. So even that, it's not so simple. But at least he can have a party where he's the king. He's the king. Unquestionably, he's the king. So that's the problem. That's the yesod of the problem why people have a difficulty biyom tov yeh betov, because it's not I'm going to use this tov that occurred to me to become, to assume my role and my identity of the Achashverosh guy. You, by doing that, you just ruin your simcha. Or you're prone to ruin your simcha. And therefore, the caterer, we ordered 10 chafing dishes. Why there's only 8? You know, order, because what do you mean? You didn't recognize my doula. Or you're ripping me off. Don't you recognize I'm the Achashverosh for tonight? So everything is an extreme issue. The band did not play the one song. Don't we know that you're supposed to play this Yushalayim Shel Zahav at this exact moment, even though the person is going to walk down for 30 seconds? But that 30 seconds, you play the same song for two people. It's one person, song one per person. We wrote this out. It's in the contract. Right? It becomes very litigious. It becomes very, you know. What happened to the Yushalayim Shel Zahav? Oh, did you get lost in the moment that the bride walked down? Everybody's just oohing and aahing. No, they didn't play Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Okay. I'm just saying, where is that stemming from? Okay, so that's the yesod. So the extent that you can be betov, because it means that you're not trying to utilize the simcha as a vehicle for being the Achashverosh or the Vashti. That's as simple as I can make it. That is the yesod. That solves all the problems. That's the source of all problems. If you're just chill, I'm here to enjoy the simcha, I don't care. That's it. You want this, you know, you want your daughter, your child to be happy. That's it. But I don't have any personal, because essentially, if you have all the parts, they're going to be happy because they're intrinsically happy. You're just going to, you'll have good music, you got a beautiful place, you got good music, friends are there, you can't screw this up. The only way you can screw it up is by insisting that, no, it's not about you, it's about me. Then it will be a problem. All right, so here we go, some questions. The best practices should, with the Rav Bogdanim, is an advocate in the following situation. Your friend's daughter just got engaged. When should you enlighten him about the opportunities and potential pitfalls? Your friend, your chaver just got engaged.
Never.
So he goes, never. So he's got to suffer.
No, because he's not going to, if that's his attitude, he's not going to listen to you anyhow.
Okay, so first of all, you're right. In other words, a person, a chacham only says something if it'll be shomea. But I'm saying he's your friend, assuming that you have a level of influence.
You think that he has the capability of understanding it?
No, let's say he's new to the simchas. Now, when people, that's not true. When people will say it's their first simcha, it's such a new world, there is an openness to learn. In other words, like, they know that they're over their head. But they're thinking they're over their head being with the complexity of the finance and the decision-making, which is complicated. That's going to be animated, in other words, like this. If a person says, I don't need to be Achashverosh, so therefore, I don't need to go bankrupt or borrow a ton of cash to try to make myself to make the the need to Baharosa's Osha Kvod Malchuso Besikarti Ferris Kidulasso.
Yeah, but some people have been on affairs, but they view their daughter as Vashti. So whatever she wants, I've got to do.
I know, but the bottom line is that's a parenting problem. That in other words, that there has to be like it has to be a nice. And again, I'm not saying not to live in, the world. Like, okay, no, everybody has a nice wedding, but you're going to have a COVID wedding with 11 people in the backyard, and we're ordering Oma sushi. Okay, you can't pull that off. So you know what I mean? But between the Oma sushi and spending people hundreds of thousands of dollars or beyond. That itself is a being, or why does the person have to do such an excessive simcha? Because I got to show everybody off that I am in fact Machas Beresh.
Right, Laharos Osho covered Mokuso.
That's it. It's just right in the pasuk. Now he has a right to do so because first of all he was not doing it. He was doing Lishma. I want to try to maintain power. I got to build my coalition. So he has a heter. We don't. What's the regular guy's hetzer? There's no hetzer. Are you building your empire? I mean, what? So in their own mind, they're building an empire. So that's illuminate them, not to go into financial hawk, because if you remove the need to be Achashverosh from Vashti, you can then become more realistic about what should be spent here. And first of all, wouldn't the money be then give the couple the money so they can they can live their life better versus, paying caterers, money for, things that are going to be enjoyed for no more than 5 or 6 hours. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying hand the kid, the bride a dandelion. You know what I'm saying? I'm not advocating extremes, but you'll go for a more moderate or modest experience. Okay. How would you cancel a parent who's dealing with bridezilla? I had a similar situation in the last couple of weeks. What do you do? I need to have this, and I need to have that, and I need to have a third thing. What can you do? What would you tell the parent who's dealing with such a situation? What could you tell that parent?
Well, you could talk about the things that you've mentioned to this point, right? Just focus on the positives and the...
No, but you're trying to help this guy or this couple talk to their daughter. What could you say? So I don't know if you can bring, it's a little bit harsh because she's hurt. There's so much, or she's been looking forward to the simcha for years, if not her whole life. And she's investing that this is the time that I'm going to become I'm gonna be the princess.
This has been her fantasy since she's 2 years old.
She's 2 years old.
Uh-huh.
What?
I said you had to start early.
What's the problem? You mean, is it a money problem?
Or so
let's assume it's not a money problem.
Yeah, let's say it's not a money problem.
So if it's not a money problem, I just withdraw from the situation. I mean, if you're not going to be able to correct, it's a little late to start correcting and checking her ego at this point. So I just, tell the guy, grin and bear it, and that's it.
That of course is the last step. But the question is, could you say Bridezilla, what is the emotion of Bridezilla? Let's go a little deeper. What's going on there? First of all, describe the phenomenon. What is, there are reality TV shows with Bridezilla. What is a Bridezilla? Bridezilla is a term that's talking about a Kala who's acting so irrationally, so aggressively, insisting that every whim and need has to be met to the exclusion of anybody else. In other words, she's taking that, it is her day, there is an idea that it's her day, she is the Kala, Nava Chasuda, but she's taking that Zechus, and she's maximally saying to the exclusion of everybody else, has to suffer. That means she could act out the way she wants to talk, she could scream at people, she could speak harshly to her mother, her mother-in-law, her sisters, she gets into fights, I don't want to have that makeup person, this is a photographer, I want the best photographer, this guy's a third-rate photographer, I deserve better, and she just goes on a series of rants. So, even if the guy has the money, he said, look, the bottom line is that look, we want it to be a special thing. You want to make the decisions? Here's the cash. You divide it up. Obviously, there's not enough cash to have all these things, but the bottom, you have to choose. You want to put more money into the dress good. You want to put more money in the makeup? You want to put more money into the flowers? You want more into the video? More into the band? Because don't they hate? But the money's not infinite. So make your choice, we don't care. You want to go from this amount of pieces of band, but if you have more pieces of band, then it means you can't have the number one makeup artist coming to be there, who's going to be by your side to do it just the whole night through. You're gonna have to get just a regular person who'll come once, and you're on your own. Oh, you want to? You have to have the dress and the dress change of the dress and all the different things. You get to choose. Whatever board to you, I don't care. It's your night. So by forcing them to have to make rational things, not just being a child. And again, maybe things like the question is even ask them the question like, why do you think you're getting upset all the time? Why is this in order? You're not normally not like this, assuming the person's not normal. Why is this causing you so much extreme feelings? Because maybe she really, it's really, really for her, it's a fear that she's going to have her simcha and she's going to be inadequate. She's going to be the not-so-pretty Kala who's going to have the dumpy wedding. Maybe she's suffering from a big anxiety that she's going to be inadequate. She has a sort of a low self-esteem situation. Or being triggered by the situation. I mean, there's all possibilities. But to move whatever you can therapeutically move the person into a reality, to a process, hey, fine, you want to have this? We're not going to get into it. This is not fighting or move the simcha. So here's a way we're going to do it. Here is the amount. This is the dollar amount. Here are your choices. You got to make out what you prioritize. Because then, hey, I don't care. That's it. I mean, that should be one story. I mean, tell the guy. You can. These are things you can tell the guy. But you can say it is essentially your simcha, but it's also your mother's simcha. To have her daughter be married is a tremendous joy. And why mar the time with fighting? Or conversely, let's say the bride is being rational, but she's not submitting to the whims of the other parties, whether it be mothers or sisters or whatever it may be, and they're giving them aggravations. So then, to speak, why why, you know, let's why is this a source of, you know, to try to, as much as can be, why do you think there's so much fighting? Let's have a conversation. Why is going fighting? Is it, because generally, fighting is never about what the fight is about. It's about the underlying factors. What is going on here? Why is everybody upset? Your guys are, your sisters or brothers, you have a good relationship. What's going on over here? So to have those kind of conversations, or, you know, tell the guy to have those conversations could be helpful. Next, this is a tough one. How do you counsel a friend who's dealing with overbearing in-laws who are insisting on a wedding super extravagant? This is a common problem. See, so let's say you have a family A who is, let's say, mega wealthy, and the other family is, you know, comfortable. And they have different visions. One might want to make let's call it a West Hempstead level, moderate, you know, middle of the road simcha. And the other person wants, we're doing the hotel in the city, we're looking at the Pierre, we're flying in flowers in from Holland, we're going to have Yaakov Shweki, we're going to have him as the main singer, we're going to have an orchestra, we're going to have a choir, we're going to have a 10-piece string for the thing. You know, we're gonna, you know, the best in every category, we're going to have the best caterer, we're going to have racks of lamb, you know, whatever he, just, well, how does those, so how does one deal with that? Now, to probably know what, now, why is it even more challenging? Because this person was, till recently, a perfect stranger. And now you have to give them your child and your money. How do you navigate that?
I think it's similar because I have to know of
situations.
Kind of situation. Basically, you tell them, you have your budget. Tell them, this is my budget. They can do whatever they want as long as they pay for it, but this is all you're doing.
Correct.
And the move that, been my number of guests that I'm bringing.
Right. So things like this. The way to do it is like this. I'm going to use a moderate of the road New York wedding for, let's say, 250 people is $50,000. And that's a little decent. Okay, I'm going to make it. I, as representing happening, I'm handing you a check for $25,000. You want to supersize this $50,000 wedding to a $150,000, fine. And you will get to have as many guests as you want, and I'm going to have my 125 guests. That's it. Here's a check. That's the way to do it. It's the way to do it. You're not saying, you know, because you don't know these people. You can't be telling, you're going to give them, you're going to tell them about the Ibn Ezra. Let me tell you about the Ibn Ezra. Let me bring you into Kohelis chapter 7, Pasuk 14, where he points out, why should a wise man who has inherited ill be happy with something that's not last? Why would you be happy about that? No, that would not be the way to go. He's not going to appreciate that. So it's fine, because don't they hate? This is what we can do. And this represents, you can't give the guy $5,000 and say, you know, that, so I'm doing, assuming in the world, assuming, you know, I'm not dealing with the male, female, you know, the complexity of that, whatever the norm is, because there's now kind of no norm, but this represents half of a wedding that we would feel very, very good being part of. This amount of gas at a mid-tier place with a mid-tier menu. Everything mid-tier. It's not a Mercedes, but it's not a 1974 Toyota Corolla either. Level of Simcha. It's a mid-tier. It's a, you know, whatever
not
you want to call
it.
Not a Ford Pinto. Not a Ford Pinto. Okay? That's what we can do. Now, you want to make this a beautiful event more? We'd be honored to participate in that. That's it. That's the move. Okay. Next question. What should a person have a conversation with their wife as they're anticipating within the week before the simcha? You've negotiated all the stuff and everything's relatively calm, but there's a halacha of the Yom HaSimcha. That is itself a special kalos, because the energy and the emotions are super high. Well, what should a person do? What can they do before they go to the simcha? Or, and better yet, even have a family meeting. Family meeting the week before the simcha. If you were going to address the family at the family meeting 1 week before the simcha, what should be said? What are some of the key, what would be the key bullet points? Go ahead.
I mean, some of it is kind of, you should enjoy the moment, live in the moment and enjoy the simcha. Don't sweat the small stuff.
Right.
And, you know, let yourself enjoy.
Okay.
I think some people are so anxious about everything going well that they don't let themselves enjoy.
Because they need to be the achashverosh or the vashti, that it must be, because I can have a okay, it has to be perfect. So I would start off, the opening bullet point be is, we already have a simcha. In other words, we've already won. Such and such is getting married, and we feel good about this, the couple, and they love each other, and they're good for each other, and they're going to build a beautiful binding with Israel. So already it's a tremendous joy, joyful thing. And we have a good rabbi going to officiate, and we're at a good place, and we have a good cater. We have everything good. Already we have an outstanding situation. However, there's things that could undermine that, which is there's going to be some personalities which are a little frictional. Not worth it. Don't engage.
Well, the question is, if this meeting is before or after you did the seating?
Right. The seating is a tough situation. I got that. But let's say that's a whole shiloh. The seating is a good question. But let's go back to let's just leave the seating on the side for a moment. Number one is to say we should just take in the fact that we have a tremendous simcha here per se. That's it. How many people do we know who have families who have adult children who are not married? Or worse, people have married and they've been in a suffering divorce. So we just have to appreciate how much tov we have here. It's an immense thing. So we should not allow the small stuff. And I say there is a feeling that we want to make it our simcha and to reflect our personal greatness. We need to say that there's only two great people, it's the Chas and the Kala, and we are there to make them have a great time. That's our job. And if we lay back and focus upon them, we're going to have an outstanding time as well. Because the people that we want to be there are going to be there. And the people who your essential friends are, they always show up. The people who are not your friend, but you have to take for political reasons, they show up, they don't show up. Okay, so they didn't show up because essentially, you know, either they have a very good reason, or you're not that friend, and you just did it to be Yotzei Zayin, and that's okay, because we live in a community. We have to show shalom bias in the community. That's point number one. And the bottom line is that there's certain triggers. There could be certain personalities each can mean. And the bottom line is just, you know, be nice and be cordial. Don't engage, you know. And okay, those are personality issues. Decisions. If people insist, just be mochel. What they call be maver al midosav. Let it go. Don't have an argument at a simcha. I cannot tell you how many arguments, intense arguments, and arguments at a simcha are always intense. I've seen at simchas. Humongous amount, tremendous amount. Because if you say the argument was whether or not this person should go this way, I'm just saying arguments are just like of no substance. Just here's your default setting. Your mocho. Your mocho.
The problem is, like you say, well, the melech isn't going to be mocho on his covet.
Yeah, but that's the point, is that you're being mocho being the melech. That's the key. The key thing is not being insist on being the melech. And it's not simple. I'm not saying it's simple. But again, the more conscious it is, the more successful you will be. And then getting people into this whole mindset in advance, that's a tremendous thing. And then just to keep on thinking that we have the tremendous stove, and then just allow them, and then just enjoy the moment there, after, you know, cause then especially most people, I would divide the simcha into two zones. there's the start time, let's say it starts at 6:30, and let's say the chuppah's over, let's say at 8. During that time is when the tremendous, there's a lot, the tension is the most. And when people go out to the reception hall, they're married, whatever battles, they're over, you're going to hit the bar, you're going to relax, and then already people are going to be chill. I mean, there are certain people who are not chill, but you can then, but I'm just saying, you can even back it up and just able to just appreciate the good that's happening. What I'm saying, maybe it's simple to say, but you see that Achashverosh, what happened to Achashverosh? She called him, you know, he got lost, he got drunk, and then on the seventh day, I need to see Vashti to show up for glory. In other words, he had the ball at the first, at the 1 yard line. He had pulled, there's no evidence that he was not successful with all, entertaining all of his dignitaries. And 6.5 days, he was successful in engaging all the people of Shushan. The last moment, he lost himself, that he had to push him a little bit too more Achashverosh. And Chazal say, I want to show you, you know, there's an argument, who's the beautiful one? Is it the Persian women are the most beautiful? Is it the Babylonian women? There was a Gemara says, what were they arguing about? That he had to show, no, let me show you my wife. And then the Gro has a nice line. He asked for Vashti Hamalka. Bring out Vashti to show her beauty. And it says, Vatzma'ein Hamalka Vashti. The queen, Vashti, refused. In other words, her personal sense of, what? I'm a call girl? I'm doing a pole dance over here? No, I don't think so. Her guy, that then became a ego battle between Melech Vashti and Melech Achashverosh and Malka Vashti. Obviously, she lost, but she could not, she had to die on that hill because she felt her fundamental identity as being I'm Malka Vashti. You want Vashti who happens to be a queen. No, I am essentially the queen. And that's why the Gemara says, you, who my father could drink and hold his liquor in front of 1,000 people, 100 people, you, who are the son of a stable boy, you drink wine, you came to hold your liquor, or she had to indict you. You're not even a man. You're not even a fraction of the man like that. You're a son of a loser who came, you freakishly got in as the melech, you don't got what it takes. So she had to stick it to him. Why she had to stick it to him? Because he was sticking it to her by having her come there to do the catwalk, walk and show off, because I'll say to be naked, but you know, it doesn't mean literally naked, but in a way that everybody's looking at her as a chafsa. And she can want, I am not a chafsa. I am a gavra. I'm not any gavra. I am a Malka Vashti. So that ruined from the plame shot, that this is his pushing his Melech Achashverosh too far, and her pushing her Malka Vashti too far caused them both to lose. He lost a beloved wife, and she lost her life. That's the ultra extreme story. So that's the full. So obviously we're not in that situation, but we partake of the same emotion on our level. But we have to, and just being aware of it already takes out at least 25% of the problem. If you could talk about it with the family, take another 25%. You could do a chazara a week before, another 25% thing. And then you're in control. Because you know the emotion that's gonna sink, and then you can help each other. It's not worth it. You could have the conversation in advance. Tremendous. And then literally, even though you're spending $50,000, you're actually going to enjoy that $50,000. I can't tell you people who think, and they're just happy it's over. They're just happy it's over. It was so exhausting, so stressful, trying to keep everything together, and they're just like, poof, I think that's done. You know what I'm talking about? And I know everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's Meisim B'Cholyom. But I just felt that it's something that and then a person could have a tremendous experience. He could enjoy the simcha. He could enjoy the joy of friends, seeing his child and his and their spouse to be launching their life into a thing, having a good time. You could just enjoy the nachas, and just pure nachas. Now, though Ibn Ezra pointed out, I'm not saying it's the highest toe, but at least within that framework, It's Chazal say it's Chai Isha, but it's at least you can enjoy the Chai Isha. You don't want to be a guy who's living in Chai Isha and not enjoy Chai Isha at all. Pshat Simcha Simcha. This is a game changer. Trust me. I literally have seen the dark side of the Simchas, but there could be a very successful Simcha experience. Any questions? All right, again. Everybody should hear me Zocha for a wonderful Simcha.